Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. It is week two for Olympic Golf, with the women now taking center stage. It's also a huge week on the PGA Tour, the Wyndham Championship, the final chance for players to secure full status for the 2025 season, as it is the regular season finale. Rex, we're going to get to the player preview at the end of this podcast, but just curious, from your perspective, this is now your second week in Paris, second time covering the Olympic tournament. What is the experience this week with the men, Scottie Scheffler, Hideki Matsuyama, Tommy Fleetwood now gone, and filling in that void is Nelly Korda, Lydia Ko, Rose Zhang, and the like?
I think the anticipation, based on what we saw last week, we sort of addressed this, that Monday through Wednesday last week for the men, it was a ghost town on the golf course because fans at the Olympics aren't allowed during practice rounds. And that's sort of what you were dealing with. So you didn't know what to expect when you showed up on Thursday, and Victor Perez hit the opening tee shot early Thursday morning last week for the men, and it was a scene. It got the week off to just an unbelievably cool start, and it really set the tone for what we saw the rest of the week. We saw unbelievable crowds. They were sold out. They were energetic. I think Rory McIlroy probably said it best when he was asked, is this a major? And he shook his head, and he goes, this is more fun than a major. And I think that's what we ended up with. It's a similar scenario this week. Now it's a shorter buildup. We only have Monday and Tuesday. The women's competition starts on Wednesday, which is why we're taping this on Tuesday, but no one's been on the golf course the last 2 days. I will say there were enough women on property on Saturday and Sunday, and some who have been here for the entire time, who probably have an understanding of what tomorrow is probably going to be like Wednesday morning when you have the world watching golf again. And I think that's what we're going to end up with. And it's hard to explain for someone who hasn't seen it. It was shocking to the men last week because they weren't anticipating that, because we didn't have that in 2016 in Rio. It's not a nation that really embraces golf the way we probably wanted to. And I've spoken to a lot of people about this week, obviously with Tokyo, the last time we played the games 3 years ago, COVID-19 sort of took a toll on that one. This is so different and it's so exciting. And coming into this week, I think that's the part you want to embrace. And then you want to start seeing, and I had Annika Sörenstam on Golf Central earlier today talking about, she's the president of the IGF, how different the course is going to play last week versus this week. And we can get into some specific examples here, but it's so cool when we have these back-to-back weeks. I remember the US Open did this a couple years ago at Pinehurst. Like, you don't really want to make the comparisons, but there will be something really, really cool to the idea of when Lydia Ko comes to the 18th tee. And well, Scottie Scheffler did this last Sunday on his way to a gold medal. And it'll be a little bit different because it's going to play as a par five instead of a par four. But I love the comparisons.
Yeah, I love the comparisons too. It's so easy to do and also provides context to what we're actually witnessing. And keep in mind, over these previous two iterations of Olympic golf, where the men were sort of ambivalent towards it, they were indifferent. Maybe they didn't even show up in the case of Rio or Tokyo. That has never been the case for the women. For whatever reason, they have embraced it more wholeheartedly than their male counterparts. I think that only adds to some of the excitement as the players now get their first looks at Le Golf National. Rex, there's about 30,000 fans a day, a sellout for each day of the men's tournament competition. Are they expecting similar turnouts for the women? Because, you know, keep in mind with the major championships that you see for the women in the five biggest events, this year's U.S. Women's Open at Lancaster Country Club in Pennsylvania was the biggest crowds that they face all years, about 20,000 fans who are on site for this one. Are they expecting sort of a similar vibe? I think that would only add to the intensity and the atmosphere for what should be another great week.
According to officials this morning, the last two rounds, which will be Friday and Saturday, they are sold out, which is going to be right around that number of 30,000 people a day. And the first two rounds, Wednesday and Thursday, are trending in that direction. I will say the anticipation is that we reach that threshold that we reached last week, simply because golf has such a degree of popularity in France that we did not see in Brazil. We certainly did not see in Japan. I think what Perrine Delacour, who is the French woman who will hit the first tee shot tomorrow morning early, what she will experience will be very, very similar to what Victor Perez experienced last week for the men. And I will say it was pretty cool. We just learned this morning, we were going through the production meeting, that officials had planned on using the tee box one forward from where the men played on the first hole. And the golf course is going to play shorter, obviously, for the women than it did for the men. But based on what happened last week with Victor Perez and that scene and how it sort of just set the week up for success, they decided to use essentially the front end of that back tee box to get the same feeling, to get the same vibe. You know what that was like going back to 2018 at the Ryder Cup. It's not that amphitheater, but it's still really, really cool. And to hear the French national anthem being sung like loudly and just full-throatedly at 9 a.m. in the morning to get things started, I think that's what we'll see.
Rex, how about the actual golf course? Because the Golf National for the men, it's kind of a known quantity at this point after seeing it at the Ryder Cup every year at the French Open, and then last week for the Olympics for the men, in that it's not very long. By modern standards for the male players, they don't have to hit a lot of drivers. You're basically all playing from the same spots in the fairways and then hitting into the greens. The rough was very thick, very lush, to the point that you could almost lose golf balls. And so the tall fescue, even just off the fairway, it was pretty unforgiving. I think we saw most decisively on the 71st hole of the golf tournament, Scotty Scheffler and Tommy Fleetwood both missed left. Scotty is able to hit it higher, keep it on the green, makes birdie. Tommy Fleetwood, a more shallow attack angle, hits it over the back, makes bogey, and gets the silver medal. What are you seeing from the golf course sort of a week later? I'm assuming they've cut some of the rough. I'm assuming they've moved up some of the tees. What are you seeing? Although the style of play is going to be differently, do you think how it's actually played by the players will be different as well?
I spoke with Kerry Haig, who is the setup man for the PGA of America, and Scotland's probably finest. The best. So, yeah, England's finest, but we can keep going round and round about that. Old joke. He's setting the golf course up last week and this week for the Olympic competitions. And he was setting up the 18th hole when we had a bit of a long conversation about the idea. First, I'll address the rough. So as our colleague Brad Faxon pointed out last week, as far as graduated rough, Brad said it was the best example of that he had ever seen. It was very uniform. It was very well done. I think we saw it time and time again. If you missed the fairway by 2 paces, you could get it on the green. If you missed it by 5 paces, kind of depending on the lie, you were going to struggle a little bit. If you missed it by 10 paces, you were pretty much hacking out. And that's what you want. I think when we talk about graduated rough, when let's give credit to Mike Davis, when he sort of introduced the concept, that's what we were trying to get at. And they did a really, really good job of that this week. The first and second cuts have not been touched. And they're probably going to be as thick and juicy as we saw last week for the men, which will be interesting because hitting the ball straight is going to be at a premium for the women, certainly. Now, the third cut has been brought back. I think 2 days ago, it was brought down 8 millimeters, which, according to the Google math that I did, is about a half an inch. Kerry Haig said, look at you're doing the Google math. He's going straight to the Google machine. He's going to find out. So 8 millimeters is almost a half an inch. And then I think they're going to top it off before play begins on Wednesday. Probably the biggest difference, and this is a fun conversation, and we kind of went back and forth on it. The idea, again, the 18th hole was a par four for the men. It will play as a par five for the women. They're playing a forward tee box for the women. It played as the hardest hole for the week for the men. And we saw it time and time again on Sunday afternoon. It was really, really good theater. I think Tom Kim was probably the best example of this. He comes to 18, knows he needs a birdie to have any chance just to get on the podium. Bigger conversation about Tom Kim just getting on the podium. Ends up making double because situationally, he knew what he had to do. It didn't matter if he finished sixth or fourth. Like at that situation, it doesn't matter. We're going to see more of that from the women. And as Kerry Haig sort of explained it to me, and I guess I get where he's coming from, and he did it in his Scottish / English way, it's just the number, is what he told me, comparing par four to par five. I get what he's saying. It's just a number. But imagine a scenario where we're sitting late Saturday afternoon and the women are finishing up, and there is the opportunity for someone to make an eagle or someone to make a bogey to either win a gold medal or not get a medal at all. I think that scenarios for excitement and theater and let's call it drama are much greater this time around, it being a par five, than what we saw last week for the men. Now, that being said, I sat and watched the hole. My perch is on top of the grandstands on 18 for Golf Central. I watched a lot of the women for the practice rounds come through today, and they're driving it in about the same spots where the men on 18 drove it. I will say that it was downwind and the greens are firming up, and we're going to see that. That's going to be a trend that we're going to see throughout the week. Anyone that pitched the ball hole high or beyond was off the back of the green. So that's going to be something they're going to have to deal with. And I saw a lot more players going to the layup area and hitting wedges and trying to see how close they could get it to there. Kerry Haig seems to think the majority of the field will go for that green in two. We'll see.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting. I felt like for the men, you were more likely to lose it on 18 than you were to win it. I think the opposite will now be true for the women, where you could see a birdie go out and win it and nab the gold medal that way. Either way, the last four holes are incredibly compelling. Either way, the women play a stylistically different different game than the men. You keep in mind that Sepp Straka leads the PGA Tour in driving accuracy at 72%. That would rank outside the top 40 on the LPGA. That's exactly where Nelly Korda is, hitting 72%.
That was interesting.
Of the fairway. So I really don't think, barring just a completely wild miss, that some of this hack out rough is going to even come into play, but it will certainly place a premium, just as it did for the men while finding the short grass. Rex, we will get back to the women in a second. Again, it's a huge week on the PGA Tour with the Wyndham Championship, the regular season finale. Pretty good field. I believe 18 Olympians who were in last week's field have made the trip now to Greensboro. It is going to be very interesting. They're hoping to get the 72-hole tournament done by Sunday. Keep in mind, the weather is going to be a very big story. The remnants from Tropical Storm Debbie that certainly affected us here in Ponte Vedra. We had 3 or 4 inches of rain. It's going to be even more of a story in Greensboro, where the system is just going to basically sit on Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina. They're expecting upwards of 2 inches of rain each day on Thursday and Friday. We're going to see how much Sedgefield Country Club can actually take on. But this regular season finale, Rex, it's not just the race for the top 70 and securing full status. It's also positioning for the top 30, the top 50, which gets you into the BMW Championship and all the signature events for 2025. Second year we've now seen this, with this reduction from top 125 fully exempt into top 70 for the playoffs. Do you like this more stringent cutoff that the PGA Tour has adopted with the Wyndham Championship?
I don't like 70-player fields. That's a different conversation that we've had about signature events. I feel like that's a very arbitrary number. I don't like the way that's diluted what I think the game should be at that level, where there should be some meritocracy, where we should see a player who's 120th be able to play his way into these events a little bit more on a regular basis. I love what it's done for the Wyndham Championship, to be honest with you. I was texting with the tournament director, Mark Brazel, a few days ago when I found out that Shane Lowry, who made the trip over. And it was important to him for an interesting reason that you just pointed out. Suddenly the Comcast top 10 comes into play. And he knows when he gets to, he's 10th right now. He knows when he gets to Eastlake how important that's going to be. So you want to pad the numbers. You pointed out top 50 is such an important number right now. And I think Memphis has turned into the most important of all the playoff events, because suddenly that decides either you're in the signature events or you're not. And I think we learned this year, there's no longer any debate that that's the cutoff. If you're in the signature events, you can pretty much just write your own schedule and you have to play really, really bad to play your way out of it. I will say, I think Wyndham Championship a few years ago, but probably more so now, has become a default playoff event. When you look at what players are trying to do positioning wise. And again, that goes from top 10 to top 30 to top 50 to top 125. So I think it's really, really good for what we see at the Wyndham Championship. As far as the field, it's probably the best field we've seen in a long time. And you pointed out the one number that just shocked me the other day when I looked it up. 18 players made the trip from Paris all the way to North Carolina, including Victor Perez. He couldn't even enjoy what he did. He had to go straight to Greensboro.
Fourth means nothing. We just established that. Victor Perez fourth in Paris, and now he's worried about his FedEx Cup livelihood. It is pretty jarring, isn't it, Rex, to go from a week in which Scottie Scheffler made, what, $35,000, Tommy Fleetwood made zero. No one's talking about money. Everyone's playing for something, not just themselves, but also their country. And it was a reminder that probably the two biggest tournaments in all of golf, there is zero prize money up for grabs in the Ryder Cup and the Olympics. And now those are two of the most enjoyable. As it relates to the Wyndham Championship and now the regular season finale on the PGA Tour, I really like it. I think cutthroat is good. I think intensity is good. I almost do feel like, you mentioned that this feels like a playoff event. I almost think, Rex, that the PGA Tour could even do a better job of making this into a bigger deal than it is. Because when you think about it, the Wyndham Championship is essentially like Q school pressure just for rich folks. You know, trying to get secure status, trying to make sure you're basically going to be guaranteed $750,000 at minimum, based on playing a full PGA Tour schedule next year, your career trajectory, locking that up. You don't have to go into the fall you know, wondering how many events you have to play or trying to secure your status that way. And you look at some of the names who are not yet either secure for the BMW Championship in the top 50 for next year, or even the FedEx St. Jude Championship. You know, Victor Hovland is 55th. He's not playing this week. Minwoo Lee, 62nd, who was last week at the Olympics. Jordan Spieth is in the field this week. He is 63rd. Nikolai Hogard is 80th. Ricky Fowler just outside the top 100. Yes, I understand there's other opportunities in the fall if you play a couple times and you make sure you're still among the top 125. As it relates to Victor Hovland, as long as he's inside the top 30 in the official world golf ranking, he's still going to be in the signature events for next year as well. But I like the idea, Rex, of having fewer fallback options, having fewer safety nets. I think that makes for a more compelling, cutthroat product that I think translates better to TV audiences as well.
Well, and I think that's where we're heading one way or the other. When we start talking about whatever the product's going to look like next year or beyond, I think it's going to become more draconian, because you're going to end up with a situation where it's a hard deadline. It's a hard cutoff. Whereas before, if you start going down, I'm trying to remember exactly how many. If you go into the PGA Tour media cut, I think at one point there was 39 different categories of players of varying skill levels and various popularity who had some sort of status on the PGA Tour, starting at the major champions and going all the way down to, I think it's called the veteran category, which you might get into three or four events over the course of the year. I think you're going to see those peeled away. And to that point, events like the Wyndham Championship are going to become more and more important, because suddenly it doesn't mean, I guess you could make the argument that a finish here is no more important than a finish at the American Express way back in January. However, this one feels more important, because if you've gotten yourself to this point in the season and you're 53rd and you don't have the luxury that Victor Hovland has of being top 30 in the world, or knowing you're going to get some sponsor exemptions, this means something. If you get to this event and you're 127th and you're staring in the face of a fall where you're going to have to scramble and play as much as humanly possible, this means something. I'll go back to Billy Horschel. And I think you and I were both there at Royal Troon when he finished up. And look, he made a spirited run there at the Open Championship. But as he was walking off stage, I think you heard it, he was asked, are you going to, I think the 3M was the next week, if I'm not mistaken. Are you still going to the 3M opening? It was like, yeah, I'll be on the range on Monday afternoon. He was. He ended up withdrawing. I think he was sick. But he showed up there. And I think that's an indication of how important closing stretches to players.
Yeah, I absolutely wish I was covering next week in Memphis. I agree with you. I think that's the most important playoff event. Instead, I'll
why aren't you in Memphis?
With my five-year-old who's beginning kindergarten. It's a Thursday start. It is a whole thing. Instead, I will be for a couple of days at the BMW Championship at Castle Pines, where everyone is happy. It's just happy to be there, because they've already secured exempt status in the signature events for 2025. Everyone is in a very good mood. They can literally only improve their positions and improve their livelihoods and improve their bank accounts. You've mentioned the names, the Rex. I was pretty surprised to see, just how little a PGA Tour win can get you. And I understand it gets you the two-year exemption. It gets you into a host of other big events. It gets you a lot of money. But keep in mind, like a player like Jake Knapp, right, who won in Mexico, and they also have followed up with a good week the following week in Palm Beach. Jake Knapp, winner on the PGA Tour, four times he finished in the top 10 this year. He's 47th. Like, he's not even exempted the signature events next year. Austin Eckroat, Nick Taylor, both winners on the PGA Tour this year as well. Just barely, literally in the case of Nick Taylor, he is number 50, just barely inside the top 50. It goes to show you that the PGA Tour is getting more and more competitive, more and more cutthroat. These players, even if they win at the biggest stage, are not fully exempt into the signature events with the best and the brightest. We'll play more to come on that front. It will certainly be a highlight of our recap podcast whenever it is that we do record that. Rex, let's finish this podcast with a bit of a women's preview. You've been talking to the players over the past couple of days. I first wanted to start with the world number one, and I would think the biggest headliner this week in Nelly Korda. Been a bit of a strange season. I mean, she won six times in the first 5 months of the year. Everyone's sort of comparing her to Caitlin Clark. She's getting some national attention. And then she follows it up with three consecutive missed cuts, two of which came in the major championships with the U.S. Women's Open and the KPMG Women's PGA. She's also the defending gold medalist at the Olympics. You talked to her. What was her mindset? What was her vibe as she entered the first round on Wednesday?
I talked to her, but more importantly, I had a chance to talk with her swing coach, Jamie Mulligan, who you and I, and as normal, the line that he gave me is he wants to take the macro, because we're going to not take the macro. You and I are going to drill down into exactly what has happened this season. And what's happened is she got off to a historic start by winning six times, which is an amazing accomplishment. When you look at how well she was playing, I mean, she was Scottie Scheffler-esque, Tiger Woods-esque, however you want to put it. And then she hit the wall where she missed three straight cuts. She shot the highest round in her LPGA Tour career. And I just think when you look at the comparisons, and I said this today on Golf Central, you and I are golf writers, and so we always kind of put the things in context. So you're always looking for the moment. You're looking for the snapshot that you're going to remember when it comes time to write the story. And for me, the moment was late Sunday afternoon when Scottie Scheffler was finishing up on the 18th hole, and Nelly Korda was watching from sort of back by the clubhouse. And it was impossible not to see the comparisons, not to see the dichotomy between the two. Both of them are clearly the best in their sport at the moment. Both of them have won six times coming into this event. You can connect the dots very, very easily. The difference is Scottie Scheffler showed up at Le Golf National, still in form, still playing well, still sort of casting that shadow that everyone, you know, that existential fear, dread that he has when he starts playing well, like we saw on Sunday afternoon. I'm not saying it's gone for Nelly, but certainly when you look at the ups and downs that she has experienced this season, there are question marks. It's not as though last week it was easy for me to sit here and tell you Scottie Scheffler is going to win a gold medal. Like, that was really, really easy. I didn't go out on a limb by doing that. I think you scoffed at me for going straight chalk on the medal stand, but let's just be honest. Like, it's really, really tough to pick these things as Tokyo proved. I would have never picked Rory Sabatini at 161st in the world to win the silver medal. However, Scottie Scheffler is about as good of a bet as you had going into it. I don't know that I feel the same way about Nelly, just to be quite frank. She has gone through the steps and the process, and Jamie Mulligan pointed out that he feels confident in where she is in her game, and Jamie being maximum Jamie as only he could. His point is, earlier in the season, she was at noon on the clock. She was clearly at noon. She was winning everything. But he was quick to point out, I've seen players win at 25 to noon. So it doesn't matter where she is on the clock. He feels like she has put in the time and the effort. She's prepared for this tournament just like she would any other tournament. She's comfortable here in Europe. I still think she should be in that category when we start talking about who's going to win the gold medal. She is clearly there. I would put Lydia Ko probably right there next to her for simply maybe sentimental reasons, as well as, you know, how well she can play in this particular case. But there's still so many more question marks around her, which I think makes for a compelling story.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she appears, at least from the outside, to be a shell of a player she was just in May. Just the complete dominance, three consecutive miscuts. The only time she did not, in her most recent start, finished outside the top 25 as well at the Evian Championship. You would not think, we talked about driving accuracy at the beginning of this podcast, you would not think that this would be a great fit for her style of play. She is more erratic than some of the other top players, but if she does have the driver working, she will give herself such an advantage because she is so long off the tee. How about some of the other storylines, Rex, whether it's Lilia Vu, the world number two, another American who returned from injury on her first start on the LPGA, Lydia Ko trying to win and get into the Hall of Fame. She's the only player, male or female, who has medaled in the previous two Olympic competitions. That's certainly an incredible achievement. Hannah Green has made a big move in the world rankings this year. Celine Boutier trying to ride those vibes from Victor Perez and the home crowd there. Brooke Henderson is now outside the top 15 in the world rankings, but is always a threat. How about the Swedes? How about the Thais? Who do you like in some of the other storylines and for people to watch this week?
In our pre-show meeting this morning, I don't know if you've ever had a chance to work with Morgan Pressel, but she brings a lot of energy. And so I was going to do a Q&A with her today. And just very, very offhandedly, I'm like, Morgan, what are you thinking about talking about? And she didn't stop talking for 10 minutes. And she just hit me with a sort of a fruit salad of rat-a-tat-tat storylines. And that's what we went with on air. And I thought it was very, very good. But all the things you just spat at me, she spat at me as well in very, very detail and a lot of passion. And I can't wait to hear Morgan on the call this week because she's really been looking forward to this for a long time. If I had to pick a couple storylines, I told our former colleague and XM Radio, PGA Tour Radio host, Jason Sobel this last night when he asked me, like, if you were going to give me three on the medal stand, who would you want it to be? And selfishly, because I love the story, it would be Lydia Ko, Lydia Ko, Lydia Ko. Because I love the idea of someone completing, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, the podium slam and winning the gold to go along with that silver and bronze medal. That in itself is really cool. I can't imagine. I don't know how you display that in your house and make it justice. It seems to me you'd have to give it its own wing. I guess we'd have to ask Michael Phelps what he does in his house. The other half of it is, and look, this is sort of getting overlooked. It gets her in the Hall of Fame. It's that one point that somehow is keeping her out of the Hall of Fame. And I'll go back to the interview I did with her. She was actually here on Saturday for the men's competition. And I did an interview with her on the broadcast. And she said something that struck with me because I hadn't really put it in context. And it wasn't even a brag, humble or otherwise. It was just fact. It's, I'm the most decorated golfer in the history of the Olympics. And she is. There's no way to debate it. She has two medals versus everyone else who only has one. Now, granted, it's not a gold. But when you start looking at it in context and seeing Michael Phelps last week and you start understanding, like, man, that's really, really good. We get lost in our little playground of golf sometimes, but that is awesome. And the idea that she could complete that slam this week is so cool and so compelling. And I think she's relaxed. I mean, she doesn't seem to be wearing the weight of the world on her shoulders. I think that part's fun. You mentioned Celine Boutier. Last week with Victor Perez really made the story for me. Everything else was awesome, but that really made the story because it brought the crowds out. It brought the home crowd out, and you see it at every venue. If there is a French person that's in the hunt, whether if that's swimming or we went to beach volleyball the other night, wherever it is you go, it just brings something special out of the crowd. And to be honest, Victor Perez was not one of the favorites for anything coming into this week. Celine Boutier is one of the favorites. She's 10th in the Rolex rankings. She should really be in the mix for a medal if she plays anywhere close up to her potential. That's going to be fun to me. And then sort of the final chapter, and this goes back to Tokyo and to a certain degree Rio, Aditi Ashok from India. And I think I'm trying to remember exactly in Rio. She must have been 16, 17 maybe. And so through two rounds, she was tied for fifth. And I remember doing a story and actually calling her club in India and talking to people there. And when you think about what this could do for golf in a country like India, where it's an emerging nation, it's a developing nation, and how they value medals and how this could absolutely resonate across decades. Forget about across months and make golf popular right now. This could mean the world to golf in a country like that. And there's so many opportunities for that to happen this week.
Yeah, very, very cool story. I'd love to see Celine Boutier, just as Victor Perez was riling up the crowds. I'd love to see Celine Boutier, although it's certainly a different personality, her to find some form. Four-time winner last year, Rex on the LPGA, has not had her best stuff this summer. Perhaps she can be inspired by the home crowd. It's also, you mentioned Lydia Ko, like it's wild to think she's 27 years old. When the Olympics rolls around in LA in 2028 at Riviera, Lydia Ko may not be a professional golfer anymore. She may not be playing in the Olympics. I mean, she's made it very clear that she would like to retire by the time she is 30 years old. She would be 31 in LA. You would hate to think that a player who has been so good for as long as she has would hang up the spikes when she clearly has the game that she still does, but would love to see. I'm with you. I'd love to see that storyline. Get that final point, get in the LPGA Hall of Fame, which is so richly deserved. Otherwise, I don't know what to say. They're going to have to change the qualification criteria because Lydia Ko deserves to be an LPGA Hall of Fame. That's above my pay grade, but I'm sure that could be done. Go ahead, sausage finger.
Sausage finger up. I actually wanted to point out before we get out of here, these shirts who someone commented on are very, very tight. I agree. They're wildly uncomfortable. And you know what else they are? They don't breathe very well. And it's been warm here. So you've seen a lot of sweat stains and a very, very tight shirt. So it's not a good look for me, just so you know. And also I went down to the downtown Paris yesterday and got my hair cut. So I'm pretty proud about that. We good?
For free 99. Very good. Not only were we called the dynamic duo of nonsense last week, you were, as you pointed out with your shirt, someone mentioned you look like a Greek statue, which is surely the first time it's ever been said about a 57-year-old who is undergoing meniscus surgery as soon as these Paris Olympics are over. Sure. Rex, before we get out of here, we're going to be recording this podcast. Well, maybe Sunday night, the Wyndham Championship rolls around, maybe Monday, immediately after your procedure, since you'll be all drugged up. And that could be funny as well. But since this is the final few days of the Paris Olympics, are you going to knock anything off your bucket list that you have not yet done? Or are you strictly staying to the golf course, the Golf National, and putting in your 12 hours a day?
I said no more because we went last week again swimming. I thought beach volleyball was fantastic, but I have a producer who's wearing me out, Jeff Fabian. I don't want to name any names, but he wants to go to boxing tonight. So we might end up going to boxing. We might not. It takes an effort. Like it sounds terrible when you say, well, yeah, I don't want to go see boxing, but it's a tram ride. It's a train ride. It's about 40 minutes down. And then we got lost coming back the other night, which, so that was a train ride and the Uber ride. So it's not as easy as you might think. But yes, I think I will probably go to one more thing.
Yeah, I'd love when I did the 2012 London Olympics, I loved watching the track and field. I've been watching that over the past couple of days. The fastest man and woman in the world. The 100-meter competition is great. I watched the steeplechase. That was very exciting. I watched, I'm going to butcher his name, Duplantis, the pole vaulter. Like, that was absolutely insane. He was almost like a meter higher than everyone else, set his own world record, not just Olympic record, but his own world record as well, planted a smooch on his girlfriend. It was all very exciting. Rex, I hope you enjoy the rest of your Olympic adventure. You guys are the drill. You can find him during the tournament broadcast conducting all of the interviews. Those two questions really hit those athletes incredibly hard. In the meantime, you guys are the drill. NBCSports.com/golf. All the latest news, notes, and updates. Again, a little bit TBD on our recap podcast record time. We'd love to get the Wyndham Championship in there on Sunday. But again, Rex is on our going the knife. I think like 8 or 9 a.m. Eastern time on Monday. Would love also to do it after that when Rex has hopped up on Vicodin. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys in a couple days. Enjoy the rest of your Olympic adventure.
Dynamic duo of nonsense.